Call the meeting to order now, and hopefully my plan is I have a delete everything amendment. I know there's a substitute delete everything amendment. We're going to start with some public testimony. There was one thing that we did not, one specific thing that we did not hear. Michael Fallon, the executive director from the Minneapolis Television Network. We're going to give him a short time to present it, and then we're going to hear David Zentner and David Hartwell. And David Zentner will give us some perspective that they have. And then my intention, you know, is to put my delete everything amendment on to House File 207. I hope that, and then we'll deal with the arts and cultural part. I hope that all of the amendments on those two parts will be done with today, and eventually everything gets assembled into delete everything amendment on Wednesday. And, you know, everything is, and so I hope that the serious work on those two parts are going to be done today. Although, of course, you know, anyone's free to offer any amendment at any time. Okay, so starting with, is Michael Fallon here? Yeah, okay. Yes. Come up, say who you are. Give us... It is a Friday, and some people have long drives, so we're trying to do things as quickly as we can.
Sure.
So, thank you.
Madam Chair, distinguished committee members, thank you for hearing me today. My name is Michael Fallon. I am the executive director of the Minneapolis Television Network. I appreciate the chance to talk about my organization to you today. In front of you... there are three language of three bills that we are putting forward, and I'm relatively new at MTN and very new at this process. I'm not a professional lobbyist, so I hope you'll bear with me. I just wanted to say a few things about MTN and about what we're putting forward. MTN has a 30-year history as the community media provider of the city of Minneapolis, and we've served Minneapolis for those years and many of the people around the region. Our mission is to give voice to all parts of the city and the metropolitan region, particularly those underrepresented in the media and who need education and training in the media. And our mission is to connect diverse communities in the cities, to tell the fascinating story of our cities and of Minneapolis. Directly, we serve today about 200 user members who come from diverse communities that are given access to the media through our studios, our channels on the Comcast cable network, and our whole mission is to serve communities that normally don't have a voice: people of color, immigrant communities, low-income people, seniors. The impetus for this bill really came out of discussions that I was having with some our Senate representative, state Senate representative in Minneapolis, who has similar goals that we have, to serve and give a voice and give a leg up to people who are underrepresented and underserved. The three programs that we were looking for funding for under the legacy bill is a program called Voices Multiplied, which builds on a program that we've run for 20 years at South High School that trains students in how to use media, do media production, and become community leaders through the media. There's an acute problem in Minneapolis in the education and gap and the achievement gap, and we believe that this program directly serves that. We'd like to expand this program and take it to multiple schools throughout Minneapolis, schools that are really underserved and have populations of people that have high needs and are low income. And the Voices program really engages these students and makes them community leaders. We don't have a lot of data. Part of this plan is to do assessments of how media production skills serves students and engages them and helps address achievement. We do have anecdotal evidence, for example, at South High School, as you know, one of our Video Voices students this year, Winona Vizinor, helped lead an all-campus student walkout after she had learned about about protest movements in the Video Voices class. Another program that we're looking to fund is the Open Eye program, which carries on the work of Video Voices by giving training, media training, to people from underserved communities, young adults that can tell the stories of their communities. And then the final program or element that we're looking to fund is the creation of a new media center that brings together a number of media organizations around the community, around the Twin Cities. We've been in discussions with a lot of partner organizations, including IFP of Minnesota. And we're working with the Film and TV Board, and we're looking to build a destination spot that would continue to grow the number of members. We're hoping that we can triple our number of people that we serve directly that use our media services over the next few years by having a place that people want to come and people recognize as the destination spot for media and in the Twin Cities. All of these programs really address myriad goals in the legacy amendment and the legacy plan. We're really all about access and providing access to people who don't have that access. We're providing. We have 30 years of history of covering the culture, the politics, the events of Minneapolis, and we want to continue those events and coverage through these programs. It's really about training in the media and communications training and giving people an opportunity who don't necessarily have an opportunity to do these programs and have these services in their lives. And it's really about diversity. And we're probably, I would argue, one of the most diverse cultural and arts institutions in the cities and in the state. If you look at the people that we serve, it ranges from Somalis to people all across the entire city, the Hmong. So any number of communities are coming in through our door, and we want to continue to support that activity and have them and bring more and diverse groups. And really, ultimately, we're about connecting all parts of the community through the arts and through media. I appreciate your time. I don't know if there are any questions or...
Are there any questions? Representative Green?
Madam Chair, thank you. I just have one. You talk about that your program is for the youth. What is the average age of your students?
Well, we would be high school age students primarily in this case. What we're hoping to do is really we're developing a program. We've run this program for seniors at South High School. We want to expand it to include all levels of high school students. And really address some of the standards, the teaching standards that the Minneapolis Public Schools have put forward. There's a number of standards, particularly freshmen and their communication skills, that we feel that this program addresses and gives students skills in. So it's typically 14 to 18 year old that we're looking at.
So typically then, what is the range of the age that is allowed to participate in this?
In this particular program, 14, 18, high school students.
Okay. How old was Ms. Bisner?
She was a senior.
Okay.
A senior at South.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other? And it's my intention that programs that were, of course, who knows what the committee will do, but it's my intention to not put line item appropriations in for programs like this, but that there is... the appropriate place to apply for this, and I hope at some point before we finish up everything we're doing, I'll present a set of working papers to the committee members of programs that we've heard, and just and again, unless people have some objection to any of these, just submit these as working papers of these programs that we've heard and we'd like to see committed without the strength of law of being an online.
Okay.
Online, line in a law, and again, comments from committee members on that as we do it will be fine. Okay, thank you.
Thank
very
you very much.
Much. Okay. We now have David Hartwell, who's the chair of the Wishart Sands Outdoor Heritage Council. Mr. Hart.
Good morning, Chair and members. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today. First, let me say I know I was invited a couple weeks ago to be here, and you had scheduled a meeting for a Tuesday morning. I actually flew back from Australia to be here in time, and then you changed the meeting to Thursday when I was in Atlanta, actually Miami. So I apologize for not being here earlier, but I did do my best. Let me just start by saying I happen to be very proud of the process and the recommendations that the Wishart Sands Outdoor Heritage Council presented to you. I will tell you that if it were up to me alone, some of those recommendations would look a little different. But the value of having the council is that you hear different perspectives, different priorities. And the amazing thing is we have come together almost always as a consensus with a recommendation that everyone can live with. That's truly a wonderful process to be part of. The collaboration and cooperation, despite differing opinions, is a great thing that we have had on the council. We've got a great staff. They've done a great job of keeping us on track and focused. And you've had a council who's worked very hard to bring you recommendations that they believe in. The council's recommendations are based on a long-term strategic plan. Unlike what I do in my personal life when it comes to making contributions, where the thing that has my attention for the day may get a check, the council is much more strategic in what it's doing and has adopted a long-term plan, and the call for presentations as well as then the recommendations flow from that plan. We have used the same public information channels to get the call for presentations out and into the community, looking for proposals. Many of us have gone out and spoken to groups, encouraging them to make application if it's at all appropriate. We've had a fair and open process, listening to and thinking very closely about what we've done, and it's had an element of scrutiny and review that should make you proud. We have done a very thorough job of figuring out what's the best investment of these funds. The other thing is that the recommendations that we gave to you are based on accomplishment plans that are well thought out. It's not just a please do this and we trust you to do it, but please do this and tell us how you're going to spend the money, where you're going to spend the money. So there's accountability in it, not just for the result, but for the process that they're doing. We've made recommendations where those appropriations last a period of time because we recognize things like restoration work don't happen overnight. You need to give it time to work. So in some cases, some of the recommendations to you are based on work plans of up to 5 years. I will say one of the proposed changes that I've seen surprised me, because we had, as a group, decided we didn't want to fund that program or recommend funding of that program because we had concerns about that program's administration and capacity to administer properly based on what had already been given in the past. So it was surprising to see that in your what you're looking at. I recognize there's some pressure for an annual, biennial process versus an annual process. I would tell you that I support an annual process, but I can live with a biennial process, and the commission can. But I think changing the game in the middle doesn't make sense. If you truly want us to do a biennial process, we can certainly arrange to do that. But we've been working on an annual plan, and I think it's probably not the best idea to switch midstream. I will say that the benefit of annual is the ability to respond to things that come up more frequently than 2 years. You know, the whole issue with Asian carp was something that if the recommendations, if you envision that you do a biennial process and you make recommendations and one day you wake up to carp being seen in the rivers today, you have to wait 2 years till you can get any money to address that issue out of this process, where annual gives you a much more frequent look. There will, in the next 20 years, be opportunities to protect land that will go away if you wait 2 years. So there is truly a value to the annual process. I know in my business, we have an annual strategic plan, and there are times where halfway through the year, we recognize that the market's changed somehow, and we make those adjustments as we can because it makes sense to do it based on new information. So that's my plug for annual, but I would ask, as you consider this, that if you want to go to biennial, let's do it the next round. Let's not destroy the process that's already in place. I guess I was surprised that the recommendations that you're looking at today for changes were never talked about with the council. As the chair of the council, I was never asked to come in and talk to anybody, to provide an opinion, to bring the executive committee or the full council together to have a discussion about it. We've done an awful lot of hard work. We have opinions. We absolutely recognize your ability to change that. There's no question about that, but we would think that you would look at us as experts and ask us, can we help you come up with something different if that's what you want to do? And I feel a little sad that that hasn't taken place. So I think that's my comments to you. I would hope that you would give serious consideration to looking at the recommendations that we provided you. And going with those recommendations, the process is sound and the rationale is sound and the accountability is sound. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Well, Mr. Hartwell, I guess I'd like to start with an apology, and that apology is for not having gotten back to you as soon as we put this in place. The problem, and it's an excuse, not a or explanation, not an excuse, I guess I should say, is that the legislative session has been incredibly compressed. And then we suddenly got this 1 week break, which for some of us, like me included, wasn't exactly a break. It was a very important part of my personal life. I had two huge meals to prepare. I had an entire house full of family, and you know, I couldn't, if it had really been a break, I could have used some of that more effectively, but I couldn't even recover until they were out of town. And, you know, it was like the only week of the year that I consider is really important for my
sure.
personal life. So, you know, that's my apologies for not having, you know, it's a very legitimate complaint, and that's my apologies for not having gotten to you. One point I do want to make, and one of the things I hope that we've done, and I have experience with one of the things that I've also said at other meetings, is that I started, before my life in the legislature, I was an academic working on grants, and the idea of applying for a grant that has a two-year phase rather than a one-year phase, particularly when if any process, when the whole process ought to be amendable, interruptible, and so forth, is just the amount of psychological help that gives you, knowing that that money is out there. And in terms of following the recommendations of the commission, every word of every appropriation that you made up, that you suggested, is in place. And the one the question of should we have gotten back to you, the one place where we kind of did get back to you, although I admit that it wasn't in the formal way that I should have done it, is that we did have the Metropolitan Area Habitat proposal, which we did have, which was prepared, you know, after a failure in the last session with the people from those areas, with the work of your staff, who, with the help of your staff, who I consider is one of the most competent people in all of state government. I've worked with him longer than you have, because I knew him when he was.
I know you have.
When he was in DNR, also. And so that then went through a legislative process. It went through an amendment that was offered by actually two members of this group that had 35 bipartisan set of authors in the House, at least at 35, which is unbelievably impressive to me, then went through a whole committee process and was before the council. Now, admit, and that's again my apology, I should have formally submitted it again to the council for a request, but you had it before you, and the council at that time, and I know you had a lot of other work to do, you know, such as an election, and I commend you on your election at that time, but the you know, instead of looking at that, the council just put something in that they had never considered before, that didn't follow the law, which we're supposed to be looking at so carefully about how to do it. And, you know, the problem about the consideration of the program that we added was that the Met Council submitted 153 pages detailing their proposal. Now, I understand that that's, like, impossible for someone to look at at a meeting, but the commission members only had a five-page summary of the 15 projects, which clearly didn't explain it in detail. And those 15 Habitat, those 15 projects didn't receive a high enough score to come back again. But I think, you know, once, in a sense, you had two occasions to look at it. Because once the legislature had put it into place, it seemed to me it would have warranted a more serious look, which, as far as I understand, it did not get. So,
well, Chair Khan, the couple things. First, I get the annual asking for money thing. You know, I'm on the board of a number of local and national organizations that go out and slog through the please give us money so we can survive routine. I think that the piece that I would tell you that might be worth considering is that we're not funding just one-year projects all the time. We are providing funding or recommending funding for multiple years of work, not just of single years. So it's not quite the same as having to apply every year for money. I recognize in some cases that does happen for continuations of programs, but it's not quite the same treadmill as I think you had the unfortunate experience of having to be on, which, you know, there is no perfect answer here. But I would go back and say that there is a value of having the ability to be responsive to things that come up that you didn't anticipate, whatever they might be. With regard to the proposal that you're specifically mentioning, the balance that I felt, and I can only speak personally, I can't speak for everybody and what they felt, is the initial proposal that came in that didn't score highly, and I think it didn't score highly, frankly, for different reasons with different people. For me, it was a cost-effectiveness argument. You know, personally, I run a little nonprofit in Afton with 1,500 acres, and we do a lot of restoration. So I have a sense of what restoration costs. And when I see proposals that are feeling unreasonable to me against those that don't feel unreasonable to me, and I'm charged with making good recommendations, I tend to go to the where do I feel best about. Whether I'm right or not, that's what I feel. The other piece is there were parts of that initial proposal that I didn't think were about habitat. They were about things other than habitat, and our charge was to do habitat. So those were, on a personal level, the things that concerned me with it. We then, as a council, made the decision not to hear that project, and you can say that was right or wrong. It was what we did. If you fast forward, we had an interesting discussion also about the Fond du Lac project, and I supported the Fond du Lac project. We had some extra money that came up and had a discussion among the council about what are we going to do with the change in forecast in terms of money. And it was felt that it would be unfair for us to bring in proposals that we decided not to fund and not to give completely reopen the process. So our decision at that point was let's add money to something that we've already supported rather than bring in something new. So I think what you're talking about is a continuation of the same basic strategy of we can't just reopen for one, we should reopen for everything if that's what we're going to do, and a decision not to do that. Right or wrong decision, that was the logic behind it. It wasn't because that particular project reconstituted wasn't worth talking about. It was because, I hope that those projects come back the following year as a stronger proposal that's listened to the feedback that they've been given so that we can fund the right things. I live in the metropolitan area. I want to fund things that make sense in the metropolitan area. I've got no bias against the metropolitan area. One of my responsibilities with the Land Trust Alliance, which I've been on the board of for 20 years, that is the trade association for all 1,700 land trusts in this country, is ensuring that we move to a model of community conservation that is not just about large open spaces in the country, but urban conservation, community gardens, and the things that matter to where people live. So I'm with you in terms of the need to look broadly. This is a fund about habitat, and I think we should make sure that we're looking broadly about habitat, but there are places to do that in urban areas, and we should be looking at it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. But again, the one thing is, clearly that Metropolitan project then had extra attention because it was already moving through the process in the left. But yeah, and the other thing that sort of caught my attention on that was that, you know, again, I'm kind of used to looking at data, so I went back and looked at that. That was, I can't, since you do most things by consensus, the shocking thing about that was the high division between very high votes and very low votes on that one.
Well, so I would just say that, first of all, there are different people have different scoring scales. So some of the difference is that no one would give a project a five, no matter how good it is, and others, you know, give out fives routinely. So there's a skewing there, and it ends up blending. All right. I think the important thing is that while some of us can be passionate about a project, if there's a disagreement about that passion, we've talked about it and worked it through to the point where nobody's jumping up and down and screaming and saying, you know, you're so wrong, you got to do it my way. And you know, you all understand, this is about, you know, compromise here and there. And we don't all get to do it exactly the way we'd like to. We have to find that middle ground that everybody can live with, and that's what we did.
Okay. Well, I know there are other people, and I'll immediately go to them. But I think the process that I've laid out gives us a really good transition to getting to a biennial budget. There's an awful lot on the bottom line, and I think one of the things that we would like is very much more oversight on outcomes and so forth. And I think it gives you guys, and we want you to do it, and I think it gives you guys the time to do it. But I've spoken much too much, so let me go to others. Representative Hausman, did you?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wonder if you could help me. I've not served on a number of these committees, and so I'm a little like an outsider that reads about this in the newspaper.
Oh, good. You've read everything that's accurate.
And so I think at the heart of this feels like a power struggle to me. And when I read the sports pages this morning, it was almost like, you know, how dare they? These elected officials who were elected to come and write budgets for taxpayer dollars, how dare they? And so what I struggle with is that we've sort of set up this group and that ends up with sort of a sense of entitlement about taxpayer money. And it's very confusing to me how that culture formed so quickly and is so strong. I confess that though the chair doesn't, the speaker doesn't need my defense, and the chair doesn't need my defense. The interpretation seemed to be: how dare the speaker appoint this chair? How dare this chair make an independent judgment? And it's that sort of sense of entitlement that says we've done some work, and really, elected officials, you ought to just sort of take this and not touch it. And can you help me with that? As just the outsider who just got kind of dropped into this committee and this process, to understand how that cultural thing happened so quickly.
Chair Kahn and Representative Hausman, there are different people who have different perspectives. I think you'll find, and you know, we don't know each other well, but we've interacted on some things. I'm try by nature to be collaborative. There are some people who feel very passionate about this and feel a sense of ownership. Now, I will tell you, you know, the effort to get the legacy amendment passed started with me in 2001. I built a coalition of government agencies and nonprofits over 7 years to support it. I helped raise the money to get it passed, which was a $4 million little deal. And I recognize that the work here has to be broad and a coalition. There are other people who feel that it's theirs. And I suspect you see that all the time in all of your work. I can't control what some people think. I can only control what I can do and what the council can do. And we have tried to be collaborative. The issue of why some people have that feeling, I can't possibly answer for other people. I think it's unfortunate. I think I clearly recognize that while I would like you to take what our recommendations are and not monkey with them at all, that we are advisory and we are there because we're seen as experts who can provide good, solid advice and counsel to the legislature, and we've done our best work. And that can be disagreed with. It can be embraced. I guess all I can say is forget everything on the outside and think about what we've done, and let's focus on that versus what other people are doing and taking swipes that none of us really can control. I don't know that that helps, but it's the best I can do.
I just want to add another comment. I hope we're not going to spend a lot of time discussing a totally inaccurate piece of print that appeared this morning. We could spend a lot of wasted time on that. And just the comment I want to, you know, I was very, having, again, followed what you've said and done for years, I was very comfortable with your election and your appointment and the things that you've said today make me even more comfortable about working with you in the future. And I apologize for my deficiencies, and I hope we'll do a better job.
Great.
In the future. Representative Ackerman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Hartwald, I appreciate you coming in. I know you have a lot on your plate, and I think it's really important that you be here today, so thank you. Chair Hartwell, I just have a couple of questions. One, I know you personally have visited the Fond du Lac reservation and the 440-acre proposal that was before the council, and unfortunately at the time it was before the council, I don't think we had as much information as the legislature has today. If we were able to come to an agreement with the Native American tribe that there would be a way where the land could potentially be owned by the state of Minnesota but yet managed by the tribe for the way that they want to manage it, is that something that you think either you personally or other members of the council may look at that project positively, and if we found a way to move that forward immediately rather than wait, do you see that as a positive thing?
Chair and Representative, I supported the Fond du Lac project. I have a strange rule about this work that you've asked me to do. I've done a lot of land protection and restoration here and really all over the world. And there is rarely an environmental project that I don't fall in love with. So to go out and look at this project versus looking at that project means that those that got my attention have more support and it isn't necessarily right. So I, as a rule, don't want to go out and look at projects. I've spent enough time on the land where I can get a pretty good feel for what's there, look on Google Maps and other things to determine whether or not I think it's an appropriate project. I think as a council, and I have told the band this, I feel that we did not do as good a job in discussing the issues of that project and the benefits and not as we should have. I feel personally responsible for that. When we discovered the forecast had changed, we had a discussion about whether or not it made sense for us to add that project back to our recommendation since we had already not included it. And the will of the group was to tell that project to come back the next year rather than make a decision at that point, because it wouldn't be fair to decide on that one versus something else. I see the wisdom in that, and I also wish it wasn't that way. I think what you're asking me is, what do I really feel? And I would love to see you support our recommendations as they came through. As the council chair, that is my position. As an individual, I'm not going to cry if you support that project.
Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up along those lines. And Chair Hartwell, you make a good point that you realize the legislature, it is absolutely our responsibility to scrutinize what you've done. And we have done that. We did that under Chair Murphy when we discovered in Representative Hausman's district at the last minute out on Raymond Avenue, unfortunately, the beginning of a really tragic thing with Emerald Ashbeal. It was just really, really tragic news. We received it in May. There's no way Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage could react. Chair Murphy was very strong in her leadership with Representative Hausman's help and took a really important leadership to note that our urban forests are part of our forest. And $2 million was allocated by the legislature to do really good work so we could slow down the devastation that's before us now and adapt as best we could. In future years, the legislature looked at things like Mississippi Northwoods and was able to adjust the thought process of Lessard Sam's and saved the state millions of dollars. They made adjustments and took some money off the bottom line for to stop the movement of Asian carp. There's barriers now built in southern Minnesota to stop that. That's already done. We have some opportunities before us this time with Fond du Lac, some metro projects that have gotten more information than unfortunately we had at the time. When Lessard, when I say we, I as a member of Lessard SAMS was part of that process. The chair has alluded to we didn't have as much information as we have today, so it's the legislature's responsibility there. So I'm glad you're here to acknowledge that as much as you're here to advocate for the council, it's our responsibility as legislators to look at the different things. And then one more that we did not get to look at Lessard SAMS that really emerged is the Molfus easement project in northern Minnesota. So I'm hopeful that the council, even though it's hard for them sometimes to admit that they're not the last one in the process, but they're a very important one, and thank you for the work you do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Willie. And we do kind of need to move on, so quick.
Madam Chair, I don't know that I'm going to help that. Madam Chair and members, you know, it was an interesting process to get onto the Lessard SAMS. Speaker Zeller's appointed me. It was a little bit of a surprise. I'll be quite honest. I done a fair amount of fishing, but really not much of a hunter. I was in a deer stand and really had some good naps and other things, but wasn't really very good at it, although I was ready if I had to be. But I think we'd call that an epic fail probably in your... But I do like to fish. But it's the Chair Hartwell has been a great chair, and I know you were just reappointed by Speaker Thiessen, and you've done a great job. And I think you've led open discussions and allowed people to be thoughtful, and so hats off to you for that and your leadership. You know, had I not served on there, I think the outside perception in our building, just in fairness to you, and I've talked to you personally one-on-one, and, you know, I think people might think that Lessard SAMS is maybe broken or not working or, you know, unfortunately, you know, I think there's that perception. I found quite the opposite. I found it to be an amazing group of people with great diversity that have similar interests, you know, not unlike, I hate to mention her name, but like Jean Wagenius, who's been a leader in environmental issues, the heavy hunters, you know, in my mind, you know, that want to go out and shoot pheasants and pursuit of game really are no different in their love for nature and the environment than Chair Wagenius, in my mind. They want clean water. They want, you know, to preserve the land and these sort of things. So it had I not met these people and served with the citizens and the other legislators like Representative McNamara and others, I wouldn't have known, I hate to admit, you know, just bringing my personal baggage as a member, I wouldn't have known that how much they love the environment as well. The chair brought up something about, I'm always leery as vice chair to challenge her a little bit, but one of the things she mentioned about the outcomes, and if anything I found out of by serving on this commission is that they're all about outcomes. And so each category was pretty clear, you know, the prairies, the forests, the wetlands, and the habitat, and you really sought out projects that fit into those categories to achieve outcomes, and which really tied into the base nicely, I thought, with Chair Murphy's, you know, the guidelines, the first run through the bill, that she really set up some guidelines. You know, we're going to try to do these things in the prairie. We're going to try to do these things in the forest. We're going to try to do these things in the wetland and with habitat. So I really thought, you know, these projects were thoughtful in the way that they did fit into a lot of that, into the outcomes of us as a legislature and the guidelines that were set up in our tidy little book here, which Mary says to keep close to us, Chair Murphy, or former Chair Murphy. But so I don't want to rub Chair Chair Khan too much, but I was proud of the work that it was, how it fit into the outcomes. These decisions are tough. I brought this to Chair Wagenius's committee just to kind of show everybody. These are kind of the, there's always a lot more asks. And then, you know, Fond du Lac was a good example of that. I voted against it, and I kind of joked about the other day and then I voted for it. And, you know, that's kind of the flip-flop of a politician. But and you voted for it. I think the opposite. I think you voted for it, not against it, in fairness. But, you know, it's just an interesting process to go through here and pick them, and the ratings, how that all worked out. But it certainly is thoughtful and considerate of those the citizens' dollars at all time, and clearly done in openness. I liked your comment about looking at the land versus on a sheet of paper, and it is funny how you are swayed. I had an opportunity to go up to Northwoods, so you in Representative Ward's district, so you walk through the land, and I can when as I talk about it, I can just visualize it in my mind, as you know, we're going up and down the hills in the trucks and the water and the cold of the air going through the trees, and you know, just the beauty of the place. But in fairness, that's not fair, because you can't go to every place, so it's, you know, it's hard to make decisions. So that's sometimes you know, at the end of the day, you've got the 90 million or so, so you've got to pick them, and there are some winners and losers. And the metro thing is always hard for me, and I was never shy to say, you know, I was a metro member on your committee, and I tried to move the bar towards the metro. And so this metro habitat is, you know, it's hard for me, because, you know, and I was asked by a reporter yesterday, do you support the metro proposal? And I'm like, and do you support the Lessard? And I said, yes, I support the Lessard, and yes, I, you know, do I care about the metro? You know, last year we sent all that money to Representative Ward, $11 million, so I was hoping to get a few dollars for the metro. I know he likes to have all that money going up there, but we want a few dollars too down here. So that's, you know, that's the conflict in the building that we have, and as voters. One of the things that was mentioned too is about invasives, and Representative McNamara kind of brought that up, and there isn't much specifically in the bill this year, but the council was great leaders last year, and it was kind of the timing that you talked about. The media was talking about it because they had been discovered, and there really wasn't time in this financial cycle for the legislature to respond, and Lessard Sams did, and I think they put $7 million, $7.5 million in with the DNR, and the one that I always thought would be fun, if, to me it was interesting that we never made the news, is that we actually bought, with Iowa, we bought a dam in Iowa. It just shocks me that that never was in the news, that here we are buying a dam in Iowa. But, you know, it made total sense when you heard the presentation. And but anyways, it was a great investment. I'm here to happy to hear that you're open to working with the legislature in the future, if on the two-year, you know, if that proves to be a better cycle. And but thank you, Chair Hartwell, and thank you for the Lessard Sams, the work of the folks that are on that committee. I was really honored to serve on it.
Thank you.
A couple of closing comments, and then I need to go to Mr. Zentner.
No, just thank you for the time.
Thank you.
You know how to find me if you need to. I'm happy at any time to have conversations and figure out how to collectively move forward.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Zentner? Oh, right, just a second. Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, Mr. Harwell, I think it's time for a picnic. And we're going into an interim. Chair, Khan has talked about that she's used to cooking for large groups. I know that the people in your council and the groups that you work with, that whose names are on every letter, says we support exactly what you people have done, and we should support them too. It's probably time for us to get together and talk. We're in the fifth year now. And invite the people that have something to say. And we can meet face to face. And for no purpose other than not having Representative Khan call you or you call her. Just have your people get together with her people and find a date. We could all meet on a sunny afternoon in a place that's halfway, you know, halfway up, not in the north, not in the metro. And we'll do it and we'll talk, and next year there won't be any problems.
Sounds good to me.
I have a place in Afton I'll make available.
Ooh.
One challenge is...
It's a little too far metro, isn't it?
Yeah, well...
Well, you come out there, it isn't very metro.
Yeah. All right.
But seriously, we have a little issue with the open meeting law, because if you get more than six of us in the room, we have to have a public meeting, and it's harder to do that. So,
well, we can change that.
We can.
You could change that. That's right.
No,
I think I'm going to leave now.
We'll figure it out.
Thank you.
For example, if there's a Twins game and we're all at it, I don't think it violates the open meetings law.
I'll leave it up to you.
Okay. Mr. Zentner.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Dave Zentner. I live in Duluth, Minnesota. I'm here really without an official capacity. For those that don't know me, I chaired the first Ducks rally that a lot of us in the room know gave an awful lot of juice to bring together a very diverse community of environmentalists, land stewards, people that were advocates, are advocates for water, hunters, anglers, and we went on from there to work with the legislature to pass this wonderful thing we have called the Clean Water Land and Legacy Amendment, the largest land and water conservation general ballot referendum in the history of the United States at any level. I want to say a couple of things rapidly and then give a little bit of context for some of my paranoia, some of the threats I perceive that could interrupt some of the fine progress we've made the first 5 years. As we campaigned in 2008, and there are many others like me that traveled literally thousands of miles to every corner of the state, we made it clear that we understood the legislative part of the process, the legislative checkoff. We made it clear that we acknowledged the desire of the people that we met with, whether it was a Rotary Club, a church club, a Chamber of Commerce, that citizens would be involved in vetting this process. Context for the money. Look at $240 to $250 million. Do the math over a period of time to June 30th, 34, and it looks like a lot of money. Compared to the capital drawdown in our biodiversity, our prairies, our forest landscapes, our wetlands, our watersheds, it pales in comparison to need. Because we finally did this new model on the heels of 3 to 4 decades of declining support through the legislative process with general revenue and bonding. I heard very closely what Representative Hausman said about the appearance of entitlement. I don't think it's a sense of entitlement. I think it's a paranoia that some people like I have, that if we get into metro versus greater Minnesota, if we have a tendency to move around the process rather than talk to each other, as Representative Murphy just said, about where we need to come back together on that process, respectfully, the fear I have is that, and I'm probably not going to be here on June 30 or 34, the fear I have is that if we're not strategic, disciplined, focused, stay with the system, the threat is an inch deep, a mile wide, and that we won't be able to fly over this great state and look down and say, you know, they tried something that was really pretty terrific in Minnesota. Minnesotans are above average, but I don't see a discernible difference. I don't see a discernible difference. And that's what I am heck-bent to do everything I can, whether it's the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, whether it's the Clean Water dollars, the Parks and Trails dollars, is to leverage those dollars, be strategic. That's my message. We need to stay there, all of us. We can't quit doing that. I do support the colleague letter that you got, I think, Chairman Kahn, on 2 days ago, supporting the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, the preference for the one-year cycle. I'm in support of that, supporting the Lessard Sams package through the 18th of last month. Again, I am so grateful that we are able to have this conversation, that we have this funding source. I feel a strong obligation to all those people that were cynical with me and said, Zentner, you'll never be able to keep it disciplined. You'll never be able to avoid an inch deep, a mile wide. And the legislature will take it away from you. But those are, I can tell you my experiences, whether it's the Rainy Lake Sportsman's Club, whether it's a group I met with down here in the Twin Cities, again, not to make it appear that I was the only one out there chucking, but I did a lot of it, and I heard a lot of opinions. I'm confident we can work together, we can be successful, but we need to remind each other of these threats. And that's my context for this afternoon. That completes my comments. I'm happy to answer any questions or respond to any comments.
Okay. Representative Wiggins.
Thank you. Madam Chair, you used the phrase that these funds are subject to legislative checkoff. Mm-hmm. Help us understand what you mean by that.
Approval, bottom line approval, that we have a vetting process that starts with the 1/8 that's in trust for Game, Fish, and Wildlife, and that we start with a 1/8 that's dedicated for clean water and divided 1/8 between legacy culture and parks and trails, and those proposals come through the legislative and executive branch approval process.
Representative.
So when we talk about approval process, you see our role is to approve as in check off.
Approve what?
You see, as I'm understanding it, you see our role as to approve as in checking off.
No, I think it's not that passive. Excuse me, Chairman. Okay. Phyllis, Representative Wagenius, it's not that passive. I co-chaired the reform of the LCMR to the LCCMR. I had friends like Lauren Solberg acquaint me very clearly with the importance of an election certificate and making decisions. We had lots of days down that road, and as David Hartman said preceding me and others would acknowledge, I don't use that word checkoff in a flippant manner, that it's your responsibility to vote approval of the project recommendations, including making some changes. I couldn't be more clear on that. What I'm advocating is that this process, as I said before, be disciplined, that those projects be science-based, strategic, outcome-based, transparent, well-coordinated. That's before it gets to you. And I think if we do that work as well as it's been done in the first 5 years, on average, by the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, by the Clean Water Council and Parks and Trails, not without some problems, not without, as Representative Murphy said, a timeout to do a better job of communicating with each other, but we've been above average here. I think I understand your role and mine.
Well, thank you very much. I certainly really appreciate your contributions over all the years. I think we can end up pretty much in agreement, except for a little tinkering around the edges. And I will remind that my major contribution to that LCCMR process was they had some god-awful name that nobody ever knew, and I was the one that changed it to LCCMR, so it sounded very much like the LCMR that we had had for, what, 30, 20 years before right. that or something. So every once in a while I think of a good idea. But thank you very much for coming, and I hope we're going to be in total agreement by the time we finish.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Nelson, Darby Nelson. And I'll point out, this is the last person who has signed up to testify on this. And I don't want to cut it off, but we do have an agenda, and I know there are people who want to get home for various things. And so anyone else, but I have no, anyone else will be available to testify on Wednesday for the assembly of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Nelson. So nice to see you again.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, for allowing me to spend a few minutes just talking, and I realize that it's getting late. People are anxious, and I will be surprisingly brief for a former member of this body. I want to first of all just thank you again for having the chance to speak, but I have to begin by saying I greatly appreciate all of the conservation environmental work that people who are sitting in these chairs right now have done over a lot of years. And I just absolutely, on behalf of Minnesotans, thank you for all you've done. It's been very, very important, and I'm sure it will continue. I have to admit I'm a little bit nervous about, and now that I've said such positive things about it, I'm nervous about being a little bit critical, and I hope you'll take it in that stride. And I'll be as brief as I can. I clearly am deeply concerned about the form in which that bill currently sits, in large part because of its potential to reduce the ability of the Outdoor Heritage Funds to maximize conservation outcomes for each dollar that's spent over the long haul. A quick little bit of history. The council in its inception committed itself to four fundamental principles, and our work was to be as follows: fully transparent, fully accountable, all work must absolutely be scientific, be science-based, and must absolutely maximize conservation outcomes for every dollar that was spent. That's what we built this thing on very early, and we have followed those principles pretty much ever since. In fact, early on, several applicants who had applied but had not received any funding said at a Senate hearing, and I'm quoting, "Though I didn't get funded, I'm here to say I strongly support the council's process." When you think of the scramble to get money, and these folks said, you know, it's a good process, even though I didn't win on it. The legislature early on asked us to develop a long-range plan to guide expenditures from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and we actually had begun that work in preliminary stages before we were asked to do it. But here are some of my concerns about the approach to reconstruct this bill. Under the Metropolitan Parks heading, page 16, lines 16, 17 through 16, 19, a proposal that basically does not fit, a part of a proposal that does not fit the standards that the council has established. Putting a proposal like that bill, or like that feature into that bill, absolutely reduces the credibility of the whole package, contrasted with a deliberative process of Lessard-Sams and raises deeper concerns about the entire package proposals that were put into the bill. I mean, it just you look at that and say, oh boy, what else might there be that just I think everybody would recognize is not really part of the Habitat effort? To what degree has the committee subjected these proposals to evaluation standards of the Lessard Council? To what degree, to what long-range strategic plan do those proposals fit? Where's the science? Where's the transparency? Where's the accountability? Where's the ethic to squeeze that maximum bit of conservation out of the dollar spent? Where's the plan? By circumventing the Lessard Sands process, thereby dodging the screens and protections of Lessard, with all due respect, a metaphor comes to mind. And again, I hope you take it in the sense that it's that I'm saying it. The metaphor that comes to mind is an Easter egg hunt, where the goodies are sprinkled around and folks scramble for what they can get. What scares me is that once the Easter eggs are cracked open, others will jump into the game and we end up with a process that slowly, or maybe not so slowly, gets caught up in geopolitics, where we begin to scramble, where we have lost the science, the transparency, the accountability, and the commitment to maximize conservation outcomes for every dollar spent, and the slope is slippery. For 4 years, the integrity of the process has delivered the serious, thoughtful, high-credibility outcomes Minnesotans deserve, and I think committee members, probably to a person who sit before me, want to enhance and restore Minnesota's outdoor heritage. That's where you all are. But there are no shortcuts. It will take ongoing solid science, sound thorough planning, and openness. And at that point, I'm gonna with the chair's permission, I'm gonna stop my presentation. But I want to make a couple of word comments in the following way. Unfortunately, Mike Kilgore, chair of the LSOHC for the first 2 years of existence, was tied up at meetings both yesterday and today and clearly wanted to be here. That is unfortunate because Mike is highly regarded both for his science background and also as a man of impeccable integrity. But he has passed on words that deserve your serious attention, and I'm going to simply read those, and it's very, very brief. Kilgore's words, "If I was able to testify, I'd ask to see the committee's own long-range plan for habitat. If they tell me they don't have an alternative long-range OHF investment plan, I'd like to hear what parts of the LSOHC plan they don't agree with or find insufficient. I also want to hear how much time was devoted in the committee to reviewing the LSOHC plan's habitat goals, issues, and priority strategies for each of the state's habitat regions. Specifically, I would like to know how their proposed appropriations address the long-range habitat goals specified in the state's plan. I'd also like to know the due diligence exercised by the committee in reviewing new appropriations not recommended by funding through the LHRC. Specifically, I'd like to know what basis the proposal new habitat projects were judged by the committee to be superior to the other proposals reviewed but not recommended for funding. In closing, in my words, I respectively ask that you reconsider and remove some of those sections of the bill that absolutely did bypass the council with its solid history of passing a solid recommendations on to this body. And by the way, absolutely, there's no question, this is the body that does it, and it's the body that needs to do it. And again, there's some folks who have troubles early on, particularly a couple of years ago, and I think we're still dragging that baggage along, and I feel very badly about that. It does deserve to be here. I think at that I'll end my comments, and thank you again very much for your allowing me to talk.
But again, thank you for your service, and thank you for coming. Are there questions for Mr. Nelson? Okay. Again, thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay. Again, people who want to speak to this on this part further should get to us, and we'll get you on the schedule before the bill leaves the committee. Okay. Okay, we now have the, I know this is actually Representative Lilly's bill, but I don't think he objects to my taking it over. he's found that's more convenient. What?
Sort of.
Do you want it? You can have it. Okay, so, okay. We now have, before us the House File 207, and the first motion I would like is to amend House File 207 with the DE1 amendment. This is the major thing that we've been talking about, that you've had a spreadsheet on, that we've discussed that. Any further discussion of that? Representative Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. Is there anything in law that precludes us from adding projects to the Lessard-Sands recommendations?
No.
Thank you.
What this comes out is the law when we do it. Okay. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. We now have the A13, which is the author's amendment to the DE1 amendment. And what this does, this does a couple of things, and I'll admit that there are some new things in this, and I hope that the people will be here to explain this. This addresses several of the issues that we. Okay, I think Janelle, you can probably explain it better.
Madam Chair, members, I'll just walk through the A13 amendment, lines 1.3 through 1.7. This removes a $600,000 set aside from the DNR acquisition budget for Sibley State Park acquisition.
Just for process's sake, let me move the A13 amendment. Okay. That amendment is moved now. Ms. Taylor.
And then on lines 1.8 and 1.9, this adds an additional $1 million in the first year for the Trout Unlimited project and then reduces the second year by $700,000. Line 1.10 adds an additional $500,000 in the second year for the Metro Regional Parks projects, and you'll see later on where that shows up. Lines 1.11 through 1.18. This is a rewrite of the Theodore Worth Regional Park project to exclude the trail work. Lines 1.19 through 1.24. This is the addition of the $500,000 in the second year for the Metro Regional Parks, and this provides $500,000. For the Pioneer Sarah Creek Watershed District to restore and enhance aquatic habitat in Lake Sarah. Lines 1.25 through, 1.27. This takes the half the $7 million that was set aside for aquatic invasive species work and would target it and provide grants for tribal and local governments for decontaminate grants for tribal and local governments for decontamination equipment and inspections. And on page 2, lines 1 through 24, this is a rewrite of the grant for the Hubbard and Beltrami counties for AIS work, and this was to address some concerns the DNR had regarding their delegation authority right now is only for local governments and tribal governments and doesn't include water or lake associations, so this was to address that. The next on line 2.25, this deletes the Green Lake AIS project. 2.26 reduces, I think this is the West Central Lakes Environmental Learning Center. There was a portion of the project that was not the best fit, so it was reduced to account for just the restoration and the acquisition. 2.27 removes the LaSalle Lake State Rec Area project. Lines 2.28 through 2.29. This splits the administration budget of the council between the 2 years. Lines 2.30 through 2.31. This removes $500,000 that was available in the second year for the DNR to do some pre-transaction work. Lines 2.32 and 2.33, this increases in the first and second year appropriations to the LCC for the website. 2.34 through the end of the amendment changes the last section requiring those acquiring interests in land to present the tax assessed value. There's some recommendations from Bowser to also include the most recent tax statement. And then it also, if you turn to the last page, it would exempt Bowser from those requirements but require them to keep a record of the tax assessed value and the most recent tax statement.
Any questions of Ms. Taylor? Are there any questions of members of anything that's in this amendment? All right. Okay. Well, I'll renew my motion. Oh, Representative Torque.
Just a second, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I lost my paperwork. On line 1.22, President Hurd also informed me that there was a typographical error in the naming of the Pioneer Sarah Creek Watershed District. Can I try to change that orally, Madam Chair?
Oh, sure. What is it?
It should read Pioneer Creek Lake Sarah Watershed Management Organization. Okay. So we would strike Pioneer Sarah Creek Watershed District and insert Pioneer Creek Lake Sarah Watershed Management Organization.
Okay. Thank you. Everyone understand that? Staff has it? Okay. Representative Torkelson moves that. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passed. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. All those in favor of the A13 amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passed. Okay. Okay, the next amendment that I see in my list is the DE3 amendment. Do we have a name on who's doing that? Oh, Representative Bird.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the DE3 amendment.
Okay.
And this addresses, I think, a lot of concerns that have been expressed, Mr. Hartwell earlier and others. For this biennium, goes back to an annual appropriation, moves to a biennial appropriation after this biennium is over. It, I think, is fair and more clear to Lessard Sams to prepare for a biennial process. Certainly, we reserve the right to make changes with recommendations to us from any of the councils, including Lessard Sams, but we must be judicious and prudent in how we do so. And I think that this does fund Fond du Lac. It allows the DNR to enter into a management agreement with the Fond du Lac tribe and has some Metropolitan Park money in here. Perhaps in light of the amendment that we just did and any other explanations that are necessary, that Ms. Taylor could help us out with that.
Ms. Taylor?
Madam Chair, members, I don't believe that the amendment, the A13 amendment, would affect the DE3 amendment, but if the committee would let me just double check that, I could get back to them. If that's what Representative Erdahl is requesting.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm wondering if Ms. Taylor, for the benefit of not only us but maybe the audience also, if you could tell us what the changes are in this amendment from the original Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council recommendations. I think there's three or four changes in here, and maybe you could tell us what they are and what the dollar amounts are, and then I think there is a language change in the end, too, that maybe you could also mention.
Okay. Ms. Dill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe, oh, it's taking me a second to find it, the changes would be in the forest section. You'll see the addition of some money, $1 million in the first year and $5 million in the second year for the conservation easement on the Mulpis lands. You'll see the addition of the Fond du Lac project as described by Representative Erdahl, with the land being a WMA, allowing for an agreement. You'll see a reduction in the, well, actually, there is the regional parks. This is different than the first engrossment. It's now a $4.4 million set aside as grants, and then it's up to the Met Council to come forward and establish criteria over that. There's also, if on page 20, section 3, this is from the DE1 amendment that would require the Council to go to biennial recommendation, but it does have a delayed effective date, so it wouldn't take effect until the next biennium. And then it does have the restoration evaluations and the change in the commissioner approval and value assessment stuff that was in the first engrossment, which was not part of the Council's recommendations. It also has the other first engrossment on the MCC contact requirement and the match, the changes to the MAT requirement. I believe that is the major changes.
Representative Murphy?
I have a question, Representative Erdahl. If we adopt this amendment, will the ceded lands referencing Fond du Lac go back to the status of the 1854 treaty?
Ms. Taylor, could you help me out with that one? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, members, the land would still fall within the treaty area, so their hunting and fishing rights would be as they are in the rest of the treaty area. The difference is that the tribe, I do believe, has some extra authorities with lands that they do own in them of themselves, and I think this is an issue when it comes to wolf hunting. I think that's the most recent issue where they were able to close the season to wolf hunting on their lands that they owned within the reservation.
And then, Madam Chair, Ms. Taylor, then would the tribe still be able to decide if there would be that hunting on their ceded lands that were theirs to govern since 1854?
Ms. Taylor? I believe if it's under state ownership, they would no longer have that right, but I could stand correct.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I missed the reference to the Metro Parks, which was, I think, about the third issue you raised. I didn't find that quickly enough.
Yep. Madam Chair, the new Metro Parks language would be on my page 14, lines 15 through 26.
And what was the change there from the?
Well, from the council recommendations, they did not have a recommendation at any level, but the first engrossment that was before us before had somewhere in the mid $6 million range, and it specified various projects, whereas this particular appropriation allows the Met Council to determine the projects based on criteria that they develop.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Thank you. You know, I think that this, you know, represents a reasonable compromise with, you know, some of the concerns that have been expressed about matching up with the other three categories with a biennial appropriation, but also addresses the concerns that Lessard, Sams, and others have had regarding the timing of this and the need that they feel they have to adjust to a biennial. So again, I think it's a reasonable compromise, and I would request a roll call on this.
Roll call being requested on this. And are there other comments?
Is the chair going to make a comment?
Yes.
Oh.
I'm going to make a comment, but I'll let other people. Okay. I do appreciate your attempt to move us more towards a compromise, Representative Erdl. I just do have problems with this amendment as compared to the DE1 amendment. For the one thing, one of the things we specifically like, which we thought gave us very much more oversight, was the listing of the specific projects from the Metropolitan Council. And in fact, responding to criticism, the criticism of the fact that the word trail occurred in it, and the removal of that, and I believe we're kind of looking at the possible funding of that from the trails part of the bill, which gets to one of my goals of having all the parts of the legacy fund, many of the parts of the legacy fund as possible, working together. Other problems I have from my bill is that this cuts RIM by $3 million in the first year relative to the bill that, to the DE1 amendment. And I think we've had this kind of common consensus that RIM is one of the most valuable, both in terms of its return on the federal level and its support on all levels that we have. So I really have problems with that cut. I do appreciate your, and I certainly have problems with what it does, you know, in the interest. I'm going to oppose what it does to the Fond du Lac project. I'm sure if we could bring members in. So, you know, I'm not going to ask them to come up to speak to it also. So I would just ask members to oppose this amendment without dimming my approval of Representative Erdahl's attempt to reach a compromise, which in all the years I've worked with him, I know he's a master of. This doesn't quite make it. Okay. Any other comment? What? Representative Wills?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Erdahl, for bringing this amendment forward as we're looking at the new bill with DE1 being adopted and looking at this amendment. I feel a little torn on it. I was one of the authors on the bill to include the Metro Regional Parks, and so I'm glad that it got included in the bill. And I'm looking at the funding and the amendment going down by about $2 million, and I'm concerned about being able to fully fund the projects, although I do really like how the amendment would go to a more delayed approach to coming to a biennial budget as opposed to an annual and not doing it as abruptly, which we've heard a lot of concerns about. So I feel it's going in the right direction, and yet I'm hesitant on a couple of areas on it. But yes. I guess I could see room for improvement. So I'm going to support the amendment with hopes that we can continue to improve it. But I think this is heading in the right direction. And if we head, or if we continue an annual budget for this biennium, I am hopeful that in the next year we could make up that $2 million for the parks. So that's one area that I was most interested in. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. I will point out that by, you know, and things may have changed a little bit as we've done it, but by leaving $33 million on the table, I think that is for the work of the Lessard-Sams Commission in the future. I think that's kind of a gradual move towards a biennial budget. And I very much appreciate the work that Representative Wills did on this, appreciate what Representative Erdahl's contribution has been, but I still urge members to vote. Are there any other questions? Roll call having been requested. Are there any other comments? The clerk will take the roll.
Kahn?
No.
Freiberg?
No.
Green?
Yes.
Hausman?
No.
Lilly?
No.
McDonald? Murphy?
No.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Erdahl?
Yes.
Wiginius?
No.
Ward?
No.
Wills?
Yes.
There being seven no's and four yeses, the amendment is defeated. Okay. Any other comments before the... Any other amendments to this part of the bill? Is an 810 amendment before us? Does anyone lay claim to that?
Oh, am I?
Okay, I guess Representative McDonald's not here. I don't think it's his somehow. So I guess we'll just leave that as unmoved. And we'll now lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Okay? Thank you very much, and thanks everyone who's helped work so hard on this. Okay, we're now moving to the next part. Two parts we're doing today are the arts and cultural, this part, and then the arts and cultural heritage part of the bill. And is there a couple of people have...
I'm hoping I'm getting the governor's bill.
We're still waiting for the governor's
bill. I hope we're going to get it. I know. Well, I still don't know what the Senate's going to do.
We did go through the delete everything amendment this once before in the committee, and it was adopted. So we have a couple of people who are interested in public testimony, and I know we, and of course any other comments or questions from members of the committee for the public testimony.
What are we doing now?
What? Yeah. Janelle, thank you so much for the terrific work you did on this, and we now switch to Mary Muller, mm-hmm. who I know will do well.
And your other green folder. You have two green
it's
folders.
It's behind me. Yeah.
Okay, where are we going? Okay, the first person, and I know he may have some conflicts. As you recall, there is a section in this that specifically deals with the appropriations, previous appropriations, and ongoing appropriations to the Minnesota Orchestra and the St. Paul Chamber. And I believe Tony Ross is here from the... from the Minnesota Orchestra. And there are, we're doing public comments first. I'll point out to members there are at least 16 amendments to this that we'll need to deal with at some point. Would you please both say who you are, names for the tape, and go on.
I'm Douglas Wright, principal trombonist of the Minnesota Orchestra.
I'm Tony Ross.
Say it again, we didn't quite get it.
I'm Douglas Wright, the principal trombonist of the Minnesota Orchestra.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
And I'm Tony Ross, principal cellist of the Minnesota Orchestra, and I'm here today speaking for the members of the Minnesota Orchestra. Thank you, Representative Kahn and Legacy Committee members, for asking the musicians of the Minnesota Orchestra to testify today. We are extremely grateful for all of the legacy funding that the Minnesota Orchestra has received over the last several years. Your committee's work reflects the state's commitment to having world-class arts in Minnesota. The musicians are hopeful that our management has used these funds wisely. Even in this dark time, the musicians are committed to continuing the work that we believe has been the mission of the Minnesota Orchestra for the last 110 years. The current management, as you know, has locked us out for 7 months, and we are on the verge of being locked out for the entire season. During this lockout, the Minnesota Orchestra Management has not produced a single concert or educational event. On the other hand, the musicians on their own have produced 4 sold-out classical concerts, 6 performances in schools, 2 benefit concerts, including a fundraiser for the North Minneapolis El Sistema Project, also performing at the North Minneapolis YMCA, 4 free family concerts around the community, and a free Lake Harriet community concert. Our next concert will be April 25th at O'Shaughnessy Auditorium with Stanislav Skrobachevsky conducting and Bert Hara as soloist. Through the process of planning, producing, and selling of these events, we now believe that we, the players, can produce an entire season. In fact, the current season, the locked-out season, has become a season in itself. This was not by design or by our design. It was by necessity, because we, the players, we, the musicians, have dedicated our lives to our art and our community. We produced an opening night. We produced holiday concerts. We produced a Grammy nomination celebration concert hosted by R.T. Ryback and Judy Dayton. This Grammy celebration concert netted the musicians $30,000, which we have dedicated completely, as well as a large portion of our hardship fund, to producing the educational and outreach events I mentioned earlier. These events have had no financial benefit to us. While the musicians are without salary or benefits, we have continued to spend our funds producing concerts that fulfill our mission of inspiring the community with great orchestral music. The legacy money that the Minnesota Orchestral Association has received for this season has not been used to promote great music due to the lockout. On the contrary, the musicians who have been locked out for 7 months since October 1st with no salary or benefits have produced many events for the community. The legacy funds undoubtedly would help with the considerable expenses of planning and supporting this current season and future seasons if needed. The artistic soul of our region truly is at stake, and state support, your support, is crucial for an organization like ours. Our audience and community clearly miss the musicians, as all of our concerts have sold out, many in a matter of hours. In conclusion, the Minnesota Orchestra has achieved a level of artistic excellence unparalleled in its 110-year history. We have received accolades throughout the state and brought home rave reviews from around the world. That level of excellence is under severe threat due to the destructive proposals still on the table and the management-imposed lockout. We must keep playing together if we're going to maintain the world-renowned artistic level that we've worked so hard to achieve. We also know that producing a full season on our own will be a huge challenge for the players. However, we have become our own 501c3, and we have a preliminary budget for what a full season might look like next year. Because of this season's success, we are committed to bringing the music back next season with or without our management. Thank you again for listening to us, the musicians of the Minnesota Orchestra.
Okay. Are there any other representative?
Thank you, Chair Kahn. Just wanted to mention from my perspective, well, first of all, congratulations on being a world-class orchestra, world-class musicians. It's great to hear about the concerts you've been able to put on your own and the success you've had through those. I haven't made it to one yet, but I really hope to.
April 25th.
Yeah. I was happy to see the language in the draft here. It's in the DE2 amendment right now. Where clawing back, I understand, is the term. The funds that haven't been expended if the lockout is continuing. I'm just curious to hear your take on that, the musician's take on that. I assume you've seen the language and know of the proposal in here.
Well, it's very interesting because we've had considerable expenses, of course, to put all these events on, and almost all of them have been, of course, without pay for the musicians. So, yes, it's very interesting to see that in writing. I mean,
okay. We'd support that.
Yeah.
Bottom line, yes, we'd support that, okay. that attempt.
Great. Thanks for coming.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? And again, you know, we give you best wishes for a settlement, I guess, and also to your sister group or brother group, whatever you call it, in St. Paul.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Okay. Great. Yeah. Good.
Good.
Okay, the other group I think that specifically asked, is there a teacher from the Civic Caucus who wanted to say something about the... No, okay, I guess not. I think we're... is there any other public comment on the bill that we're... and we do have about 16 amendments in our folder, so we'll start to deal with those.
Taking 10 minutes on each one.
Any other public comment? Okay, good. Okay. No, okay. We'll now start with amendments.
We've already moved.
We've already. This is what? So, we're working on already adopted. We've already adopted this.
To move it
to get the DE2. So, okay. I'll move the 1183. So, for today, I'll move 1183 as amended. I'll move 1183 as amended to bring it in front of us and now available for further amendment. Okay. Start pulling them out. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm having a really tough time hearing with the background noise, and I know exactly where we're at. Now, did you say we'd already moved the DE2?
We voted on that Wednesday.
Right.
We're now moving this to have it in front of us to be available for amendment today. At the time when we finish doing amendments to it today, I'll then lay it over for inclusion in the omnibus bill. We will then get the and people correct me if I say anything wrong. We then end up having from the Environment Committee, they've passed and sent it through the legacy. We have the two parts that went through the Environment Committee, which is the clean water and the parks and trails. On Wednesday, we then get all of that in front of us, and we take, I think, 1183, which is the clean water bill, which I'm the chief author of, will then become our bill, and hopefully we'll amend and pass that out on Wednesday to Ways and Means.
Okay.
I hope that explains.
Well, what my question then is, we're working off of this 1183 DE2 right
yes.
now. Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Yes, okay. Well, okay. Oh, yes. Representative Ward has an oral amendment. Let's start with that.
Madam Chair. Members, thank you. Madam Chair, I'm going to offer an oral amendment to the DE2 amendment. The oral amendment, members, the amendment will be this, members. If you go to 10.21, staff, I'm assuming staff is getting this, or... 10.21, members. Delete. My oral amendment is to delete $325,000 on 2.21 twice and enter, as soon as I find, $425,000 on twice. So it reads, members, $425,000 the first year and $425,000 that's the And Madam Chair, I'd like to speak to the amendment.
Sure. Please do. Representative Ward moved the amendment as stated, and I think staff has it.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. We heard testimony, members, about the Veteran Voices Award, and it was a compelling testimony, in my opinion. It's a remarkable program. Actually, I talked to Chair Khan and the CLA and other researchers, and most of us thought that this was in the bill. It was an oversight that was not included in the bill. The Veterans Voice Award, members, my amendment is to appropriate $100,000 for the Veterans Voice Award program so they can move forward and recognize the veterans that have given so much to us. And so that's the thrust of my amendment, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair. Representative Erdl. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ward, have you spoken with Representative Detmer about this, and does he approve?
Representative Erdl, he was here a minute ago, and I'm assuming that by him leaving, he doesn't have any dissension with this at all. So,
okay. Any other comments on this? We have the Representative Wills.
Thank you, Chairman. And just, I appreciate that. I think it's a good program, and I appreciate including the funding. I guess my question is there language in here to make sure that that funding goes to that program?
Madam Chair, the language is not in there, but the intent, as I stated, the intent is there. And I think if there's any question about it, we have some folks from the Veterans Voices Award here that could establish that, but the intent of my amendment is for that to go towards the Veterans Voices Award program.
Okay. And Representative Wills, if we need to further clarify it, that's what we're here on Wednesday to do.
Yeah, I would appreciate it.
We have, by voting for the Ward amendment, we're showing, Ms. Moe. Yes.
Chair and Representative Ward, can I just clarify that the carve out then for the Veterans Voices program would be $100,000 each year?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Thank
okay.
you.
Madam Chair?
Yeah. Representative
Ward. Thank you, Madam Chair. And to answer Representative Wills, certainly we can clarify in language, but also Dr. O'Fallon from the Humanities Center is here, and I think. Our intent should be plain to him.
We, you know, again, let me point out that one of the things we intend to do is to Wednesday also have a set of working papers of the things that we've heard and approved of, and, you know, we'll get those to members in advance to look and see what it is. So. Dr. Fallon, you want to say? Dr. O'Fallon.
David O'Fallon, President of the Minnesota Humanities Center. Madam Chair and members, thank you, and thank you very much for this adjustment, if you will. Our absolute pledge is that this goes to the Veterans Voices Project, which we have already committed cash, time, and staff to. We'll continue it. We will look for real results. We'll have evaluation. And I think our test is coming back to you in 6 months or a year. You should hear from veterans saying this has made a positive difference in bringing our knowledge, experience, and mission back into the state.
Okay.
So it's a personal pledge, and I'm happy to live up to it.
Great. Thank you very much.
He's from
very
Litchfield,
helpful.
So.
Okay. Representative Pfeiffer.
I actually had the exact same question as Representative
okay.
Wells.
Great. Representative Hausman.
Madam Chair, where does the money come from?
It's the bottom line.
There's money on the bottom line.
Well, $200,000 less now. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. All those in favor of the Ward Amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
I thought she was.
Actually, we had asked for someone from the Civic Caucus to say something, and former Representative Mary Jo McGuire is here. You know, but really quickly, we have people who have a long way to go.
Thank you. Yes, we appreciate that. And actually, we just have a teacher that wants to just say a few words, but we really do appreciate the time that you've given us. We're going to just take a couple minutes, and we're going to talk about the importance of civic education. I just want to remind members I'm here in a capacity as a volunteer board member of Learning Law and Democracy, not in my new capacity, and have worked with this organization, Learning Law and Democracy, for many years. Believe that the work they do is incredibly important, and we appreciate that you hear from us. So I'm going to let Jennifer Bloom, we have members of the coalition here, and I'll let her speak first.
My name is Jennifer Bloom. I am the director of the Learning Law and Democracy Foundation. And we have three areas that we're going to address just very briefly. We would like, we thank the committee for including civic education in the bill. There are a couple of items that we would like clarified, perhaps is the word to use. First off is the definition. We think it would be really helpful to have a clear definition of what civic education is so it doesn't dilute the purpose of the funding. In order to preserve Minnesota's good civic culture, we want to make sure that we are using the resources in the best way possible to maximize the impact. We would like the definition that comes. We recommend the definition that is included in the Center for Social Studies Education, which is a partnership program between the History Center, the Historical Society, and the Minnesota Department of Education. And we would like the programs. We'd like the programs actually limited to youth 18 and under. Our goal is to educate young people before they vote, to build habits of good citizenship before they vote. Our second point has to do with collaboration versus competition, and I appreciate the committee's interest in having competitive grants. And as a person who's been preparing competitive grants for more than 25 years and successfully doing it, I'm not shy of doing it. When, on the other hand, we have such a small pot of money, which is $250,000, and we have competitive grants, the tendency is to fund grants with small amount that doesn't actually have much impact. So through the Minnesota Civic Education Coalition, of which I am a member, we've impacted about 100,000 students in the last couple of years with legacy funds. That's just a minimum sort of estimate. The coalition is made up of about 10 organizations. We started building the coalition over a decade ago, and we work collaboratively. We support each other's programs. I was at the Council for the Social Studies Conference, where I promoted kids voting. And I talked about the Youth in Government program. I talked about the Bar Association Lawyer in a School project. And so by sharing resources, we had one exhibit space, we had one hotel room, we had one person staffing it, sharing the information. The coalition wants to continue to work together in that capacity. When we are asked to compete against each other, you can imagine with such a small pot of money that soon the collaboration will fall apart. And we'll be competing for numbers of teachers who will sign up to participate in our program and competing for students and not sharing resources. And the value of the coalition I can speak to in terms of effectiveness, but I think our teacher is going to talk a little bit about what it means for teacher and kids.
Okay. Hi, my name is Filiz Yargica. I'm a social studies teacher at Roseville Area High School. I, too, want to thank you for validating civic education in the bill. Maintaining our civic heritage is a duty that social studies teachers in Minnesota take very seriously. There is an abundance of material available to teachers in this field. Not much of it is Minnesota specific, and quite a lot of it is actually biased, and it's often that bias is in disguise. So when we're looking for research-based best practice materials, we're very fortunate that we have a one-stop place to go. That's the Minnesota Civic Education Coalition, and they have the good resources for us. I can contact any coalition member organization, and they can help me to tailor fit what my students need to the curriculum. And that's through their collaborative efforts. And I really appreciate that because it's an effective use of their resources. It's an effective use of my time. And I like that I can call them up and they can connect me to local government resources. And we as teachers want them to continue to share and collaborate. The competition would be duplicative. It would be really not a good use of teachers' time. Many of our Minnesota teacher leaders are happily sharing their resources with these member organizations, and we share our content expertise, and we really don't want them to compete for our attention and our loyalty. So please continue to support the Civic Education Coalition by helping them to remain a coalition.
Okay, thank you. We will look at changes that we might need to do that. Is there anything?
Can I just put in one small word?
Yes, quickly. You know, remember, there are people who live much further away than I do who are anxious to get on the road. So,
My name is Judy Farmer, and I am pleased to be one of Chair Kahn's constituents back in Minneapolis. I just want to say that we would like to echo the concern of other groups who testified with regard to the 25% match. We are a coalition, a very small.
We have language that fixes that. So.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Sorry, we were a little bit late.
Great. Thank you, members.
Okay. Thank you very much. Speaking of which, why don't we deal with that? Let me now move the A6 amendment.
That's right.
People have that?
Yeah, we're not going to do A4. We're going to do A6.
Yeah. A6. Are you? I'm Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A6 amendment that removes the 25% match as a as being mandatory. It says that priority should be given to projects who have, doesn't say that grant. It deletes that grant recipients must provide. It does not include AMPRS. The match to the Science Museum does remain. So that's it.
Okay. Right. That I have had. Well. Let's. Representative Erdahl moves the A6 amendment. All those in favor of the A6 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed. Motion passes. We have had another comment from the Science Museum. When we left the 25%, we left that mandatory one for them, but they only wanted that for the IMEX part of it, and we'll fix that as we go along. Okay. Okay. All right. What? Next amendment.
We did vote. Did we vote?
Did
yes.
We vote?
We did vote. Yes.
We voted.
You got one.
Voted.
I'm on a win.
Okay. Okay. Put that on the score. Okay.
I can do that.
We now have the A14 amendment, and this we have to correct this one. This the A14 amendment. This is page 522. We want to instead of take out the word delete and say after Conservation Corps Minnesota, and then take out the word and in the amendment. So it would read, after Conservation Corps Minnesota, insert Northern Bedrock Conservation Corps or an organization carrying out similar work. Okay. Everyone understand what that was? All those in favor of that amendment say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Then we... Oh. No, I just did that. I incorporated that. That was the A14 amendment. Okay, the A1 amendment. Oh, Representative Lilly, this is yours, I guess. A1 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's been brought to our attention that there's been some travel involved with quite a bit out of state. I think Bali perhaps with some of the legacy money, and we're just trying to discourage, and although we'd like Representative Torgelson to be able to go there in the future if he wants, but or soon. No, sorry. Sorry about that. But anyway, so it's to try to deal with the problem that we've had in the past, and so just going forward, it's should be pretty straightforward, and just it shouldn't have been a problem, but we're just trying to make sure it isn't in the future.
Okay. Any further discussion?
I'd like to move it, please.
Okay. Representative Lilly moves the A1 amendment, and okay. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, on the face of it, I think this is a good amendment. However, you know, there are specific cases that come up. For example, we appropriated money to the Twin Cities Public Television to do a documentary, which is going to be out this November. And one of the things that they found that they had to do, part of the story is in the Dakota Territory. And so they needed special dispensation to travel into the Dakota Territory to cover you know, Sully and Sibley, who had led Minnesota troops into North Dakota and South Dakota in 1863. And so you can run into situations like that where in order to do a project about Minnesota, you might have to go beyond the boundaries of the state.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, Bali.
That's right up next to a winter in the northwest corner of Minnesota.
Well, let's, you know, again, if we need, first of all, most of this money is part of something, not a total something. So hopefully there's other money that could be used. But again, if we need to, unless you have a tweak to the language that you want right now, if we need to tweak it, we'll certainly be amenable to it. But the circumstances that somehow we managed to exclude Bali but allow North Dakota and Ontario or whatever.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. You know, as I started saying, on the face of it, this is a good thing. We should not be going to Bali to, you know, on legacy money, but let's look at a way to tweak it so that if there is a project that needs to be done, and you got to travel out of the state to do it, that we can.
Okay, Representative Torkel.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I assume that Representative Lilly, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I assume he's referring to the KSTP report that was on television some weeks ago. I think it's important to clarify that no legacy funds were used for those trips. There were state funds expended on those trips, but they were not legacy funds, and no legacy funds have been spent in that fashion, and I think it's important that we clarify that. So while I certainly agree with the spirit of his amendment, we're fixing a problem that did not exist or has not happened. I would suggest language, perhaps, that would say outside of the state of Minnesota and any states or territories adjoining the state somehow.
Do you want to do that now? Do we want to?
I would leave it up to either the author or the lead.
Do we want to not adopt this now and work on something that will, between Representative Torkelson and Representative Lilly and staff, that will be later? So you don't mind if we don't take this one up now?
No, Madam Chair and members, appreciate the comments and advice, and it's good to hear that we don't have a problem. And you know, I certainly, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be concerned about the future.
Yeah.
And
okay.
And I know Representative Torkelson respects that. And as I've read all three of Representative Erdahl's books about the Dakota Wars, and you know, who knows what he's writing now? So
he had a terrific one about Africa.
Madam Chair and Representative Lilly, the next book is about the legislature.
Well, with that in mind, I think Representative Lilly agrees with everything Representative Erdahl says, and I think we'll not take this amendment at this time, but understand that Torkelson, Erdahl, and Lilly may work on something that makes them happy about it. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, since it was moved, we'll lay it over.
Do you want me to withdraw it?
Yeah. Okay.
I'd like to withdraw the amendment, please.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Which one?
Okay. A2 is the Erdahl Amendment.
Okay, A2. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A2 Amendment. You know, a lot of talk has been going on about our commitment or lack of commitment to the motion picture industry in, as it relates to Minnesota. And, you know, what is the best way to do it? I mean, we have proposals out there dealing with investments, rebates, tax credits, other programs, and all this does is ask the Department of Employment and Economic Development to take to do a study to look at the relative economic impacts of the various plans to try to stimulate the film industry in Minnesota.
Okay. Any discussion of this? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, I think this is a very good idea. Do you know where the money would come from for the study and how much that would be?
Thank you.
Let me just comment. You know, these departments have pretty big budgets and they work for us, and I think we can help them to do something with that.
That's what I was going to say.
Is that what you were going to say? Thank you for that clarification. Erdahl Khan.
Believe me, if they need more money, they won't be shy about coming to us.
Madam Chair, we know that.
Okay, we have the Erdahl A2 amendment. Any other comments? Although I strongly support it. Okay. All those in favor? All those. Sort of a private joke. I had a bill at one point. Let me explain this, and maybe we'll do it. Maybe Representative Erdahl will agree to an oral amendment. I had a campaign at one point to have the legislature never use the word shall and only use the word must, and so my staff is pointing out that we're doing a shall right now. Would you object, Representative Erdahl, if that becomes a must?
No, Representative Khan, it could be a must. So
Representative Erdahl changes the shall to
must. Madam Chair, and will staff take notice as far as writing for this committee?
Three of them, yeah. Okay. In each case, the shalls are turned. Representative Erdahl changes the shalls to must. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. 8-5 is Freiberg Amendment.
Yeah.
Representative Freiberg.
This provision relates to the Perpich Center. This would allow all unexpended funds to carry forward until June 2017. In the current version, the only funds that can be carried forward are funds encumbered as grants or contracts. This was the language Perpich initially proposed, and it was excluded because of an oversight. So they asked me to carry this.
All right. Yes, you moved it.
Oh, and I'll move the A5 amendment.
People keep track of these things.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Freiberg moves the A5 amendment. Explanation. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, the A7 amendment. I don't know who this is, the one dealing with historical memorial, but Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A7 amendment.
Okay.
Explain it. This one, we have three Supreme Court justices in Minnesota, from Minnesota. Chief Justice Warren Burger has a bust in the, I believe it's right before the court chambers. And Representative Khan is attempting to add Justice Blackmun. If he were added, there would only be one then that wasn't. And we are unique to be a state that has, especially our size, to have had three Supreme Court justices. And Pierce Butler is one who is not included. I'm trying to include him with this. And just, you know, it'll take maybe 15, 30 seconds here. But since Pierce Butler doesn't get a whole lot of mention around this place, let me just quickly explain who he is. It actually is not his highway.
Oh.
There's another Pierce Butler.
Okay.
Yes. Pierce Butler was an American jurist who served as an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States from 1923 until his death in 1939. He is notable for being the first justice from Minnesota and for being a Democrat.
Whoa. Oh, no.
Appointed by a Republican president. He is supported by Chief Justice, former President William Howard Taft. Butler's opposition to radical and disloyal professors at the University of Minnesota, where he had served on the Board of Regents, made him a controversial Supreme Court nominee when proposed by Republican President Warren Harding. The senator-elect from Minnesota, Henrik Schipstad of his home state, opposed him, as did the progressive Senator William La Follette of Wisconsin. Also against his confirmation were labor activists, some liberal magazines, The New Republic and The Nation, and on the other side, the Ku Klux Klan, because he was a Catholic. However, with the support of prominent Roman Catholics, fellow lawyers, the Minnesota State Bar Association strongly endorsed him. Well, maybe we shouldn't have him there. No, forget that. And business groups, especially railroad companies, as well as Minnesota's other senator, Knute Nelson. Butler was confirmed on December 21, 1922, by the wide margin of 61-8. The senators who voted against him were five Democrats: Walter F. George, William J. Harris, J. Thomas Heflin, Morris Shepherd, and Park Trammell, and three Republicans: Robert M. La Follette, Peter Norbeck, and George W. Norris. He took his seat on the court January 2, 1923.
Okay.
A little history lesson I felt obligated to give.
Okay. And, you know, we note that Nellie Stone Johnson is deleted from this.
Actually, no, she's not deleted from the bill with this. It's just the title.
Title. Uh-huh. Oh, okay. All right. That's then the appropriate title. Okay, any further discussions of this? We'll also point out that Nellie Stone Johnson is also in Representative Murphy's bill. So, okay, Representative Freiberg.
I just did a little research here, I suspect, from possibly the same source material as Representative Erdahl. And I would possibly have some issues with Justice Butler's jurisprudence. He opposed many of the New Deal laws. There are some other things in here, too, I might take issue with. But in the interest of collegiality and recognizing that Nellie Stone Johnson and Justice Blackmun are here as well, I don't think I'll raise too big of an issue, but I thought I should point that out.
Also, and Representative
Madam Chair, and I appreciate that. Thank you. I appreciate that, but, you know, the issue isn't, I mean, there are things that Blackmun did that I don't agree with.
But the
issue here isn't what decisions they necessarily made or a position they supported, but the fact that these are, you know, men highly regarded, respected, who were from Minnesota and in the Supreme Court. That's the issue.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor of this amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. And I thank you again for correcting the spelling. Okay. Representative Erdahl again.
Well, which one are we?
Eight.
Thank you. Madam Chair, the Civil War Task Force that Secretary of State Ritchie and I co-chair, and this is supported by Secretary of State Ritchie. last session we appropriated $100,000 to help to commemorate the sesquicentennial of the Civil War and Dakota War, and there are some funds that likely will be expended by June 1st, but we still have them and want to make sure that any unexpected funds can carry over, and that's what this is about.
Okay. Any discussion of this or questions on this? It needs to be, correction, it needs to be line 24. Correct that. All those in favor of the Erdahl Amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. A9 amendment on page 7. Oh, this is the
Oh, okay. This is the Ampere. This is an amendment to add some more to the Ampere's appropriation. I'll move the A9 amendment. And it was brought to my attention that one of the problems that Ampere's has is the three new stations in tribal areas that have very little ability to get public support. So we've added the amount that they say is necessary to start those, to support those three stations. Okay. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, I think that the Ampers is a does a worthy cause, we heard the testimony that they had the three new stations. I think all tribal stations up in northern Minnesota, they're missing one in central Minnesota sometime in the future. I might talk about that. But having said that, Representative Lilly, you and I have also had a talk about that. But having said that, Madam Chair, I'm just wondering if the NPR appropriation is equal to the Ampere's appropriation, and if we should consider, making it equitable to the NPR appropriation to the Ampere's appropriation.
I know that's been brought up, and historically that's been true. I thought this was a new burden on Ampere's, and maybe we ought to leave something for the Senate to do. There. So I prefer to leave this as it is, even though I'm a big fan of NPR.
Madam Chair, thank you. I know that you will be bringing that forward as it moves probably into a conference committee, so thank you for that.
Okay. All those in favor of the A9 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. This is A10 amendment. This is Representative Lilly, and I guess Representative Hausman, too.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A10. I have a oral amendment.
Yes.
I'd like to, in the blank spots, I'd like to insert 500,000. Madam Chair, this is an amendment for Como Park Zoo, and it's changing the appropriation. Obviously, Representative Hausman would be the author on this. She's unfortunately just had to step out for a minute, but it's something that I know and love as well, and certainly is a state treasure, but I would hope that you'd give it favorable consideration.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I talked to Representative Seifert, former Representative Seifert, not long ago, and he just wanted me to check on how are the gorillas doing at Como.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, they're actually in the process of working on a new gorilla area. I believe the polar bears are doing well in their new area, and it's quite a treasure. I'd like to bring you over there and buy you lunch if you'd be so inclined. And it's quite close to us, and it's really an amazing place. The gorillas. Go ahead.
We'd fit right in.
And we'd fit right in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as never being one to turn down a free lunch, likely would take you up on that. As long as there are no homeless gorillas, because Representative Seifert was concerned.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Dahl, I actually do miss Representative Seifert, and I remember kindly every time I see a Schwann's truck, his hour and a half, I listen to him talk about the asset the benefit that they bring to the state of Minnesota, as you guys were perplexing other issues in caucus. But I was already liking Schwann's and continue to, but I forgot about the gorillas.
Okay. Anyone needs any further insight into that, or are you all happy with voting on the Lilly Amendment, A10? All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Erdahl, Representative A11.
Madam Chair, I would like to
come back to this one at the end.
Okay. Okay. This is the small theater grants. We need to add the language. This is A12. I'll move the A12 amendment. This is the small theater grants, and we need to, after the word purchase, it say and install. Okay? All those in favor of any discussion? All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. This is A14. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. This was a confusion because we heard them both at the same time. A14 amendment, and I'll move the A14 amendment. And this is the one where we're looking at the building preservation, and so we need to have the northern. We should all have it. We don't. People don't have it. Okay. We'll get that. We'll get some. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Chris, do you have it?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. This is now the A15 amendment. This is the language that really fits well into that.
A15.
The A16 amendment.
Oh.
This is the yes, I'm moving the A15 amendment. A15 amendment.
A15.
It's on line 16.
The drinking is okay. The rat's color.
This is the one that's a really good legacy part of the legacy bill. This restores the legacy of the rat's stella. Well, the part in the bill does that. This backs off on it a little bit. What happens is that when the Rathskeller in the Capitol, and by the time we get to this, we'll have the translation of everything that is said painted on the walls of the Rathskeller. It was a place where wine and beer and probably everything else was served until Prohibition. And Prohibition, it was stopped, and this partially restores it. Restores it at least for the language in the bill restores it for everything, being urged to be a little bit more conservative and move a step at a time. We're doing it just for special events held at the Capitol. We're restoring the language that existed for special events held in the Capitol cafeteria, and we're just changing a may to a shall, and I'll orally make that a must.
Must.
Madam Chair?
What?
Representative at all? Our legislative session special events.
I think we get to define special events. I was told that our Thirsty Thursdays special events, and we can work on deciding what a special event is. I think not the whole legislature is not a special event. It occurs every year. So, okay. What? Okay. To the changes.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
I believe that part of the reason that the Rathskeller needed so much restoration is because of the discoloration by cigar smoke. I hope you're not planning on reinstating all of the old traditions.
No, we're very carefully looking at the serving of alcoholic beverages. We'll stay with the current law on smoke. And the other problem in terms of the other problem was the painting over all of those slogans, which was done before World War I, in the because they're all written in German, and we promised to have all the slogans here and in for those who need the translation of them before we finish this. Okay, all those.
So
what?
You're keeping this shall?
No, it's a must. So the shall gets changed to must, and we restore the spoken language is the amendment. Okay. Those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Where are we next?
looking at the A-17, the A-17 amendment, I guess at the request of the Humanities, this makes it clear that they can use a portion of the grants to cover the costs of administrating, planning, evaluating, and reporting those grants. Yeah, who's opposed? Was anyone else opposed? No, I'll move it. If anyone wants to move these, speak up. I'll move them otherwise in the interests of speed. Okay, all those, any comments on the A-17 amendment? All those in favor of the A-17 amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Okay. I'm pretty sure.
Madam Chair, we have an A-16. I
don't know if other members have or not. Okay. Is there... The A-16. Yeah. Centers for Independent Living deleted on this? Cost on disability?
On A-16?
Yeah.
Mary, do you want to explain?
Sure. Representative Kahn and members, this is an amendment, I believe it was at the request of the Council on Disability. It removes some of the language in their section related to giving grants. That wasn't they don't anticipate actually giving out grants. So it just removes part of the rider language. And then it gives them the ability to expend the funds until June 30th of 2016, because I believe actually some of the celebration of the 25th anniversary does move into that time period. So.
Okay. This is at the request of the Council on Disability.
Okay.
So Representative Ward moves the A-16 amendment.
Madam Chair, as long as it comes from the Council on Disabilities, I'd be glad to move that.
Okay. Representative Ward, any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. That's what I thought you said. Okay. A-20 amendment. Whose is that?
That's mine, Madam Chair.
Representative Green.
I have, I guess I'm going to have to ask some advice here on some oral amendments, because when Representative Erdahl's bill passed, the language from Blackmun to Blackmun was already put in, and so would it be appropriate to do an oral amendment to take out in line 1.8, take out and then take off 1.9?
Staff will take care of it.
0.8, take out and then take off 1.9?
Staff will take care of it.
Okay.
Make it right. Okay. Representative Green?
I just looked up a little bit on Ellie Stone Johnson, and when she started her political career, she was a member of the Young Socialists. She went on to be a member of the Socialist Workers Party, and then later a member of the Young Communist League. And personally, I don't think it's appropriate to have her bust in our Capitol, and so that's why I'm bringing this forward. I also believe that the $80,000 for the bus is a little high, and that are there, so I would like to move this amendment.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lilly.
I'm just, Madam Chair and Representative Green, I'm going to speak against this amendment. Minnesota has a very interesting history, and clearly she's part of it. I mean, we had northern Minnesota and other parts of the state, we had... Communist Party members and socialists, and I think there was a lot more diversity of parties in our Minnesota past. I'm sure you've had an opportunity to study some of Charles Lindbergh's past, perhaps, and you know we have an airport named after him, and certainly some of his past is quite interesting. You know, with the what happened in Europe as far as his interests, and I'm not sure what that meant as far as like political party, but there's certainly interesting stories of what that might mean or be, and I think we just have to be careful, because people change. I think in this case the party that you're referring to, Ms. Johnson, actually changed later in her life and became quite active in the labor issues part of things, and I think she actually changed her positions quite a bit, and I think that's what she's actually more known for than what happened when she was younger, and that often happens. I don't know about your past, but you might have different political beliefs or different, maybe even did something when you were young, and I don't plan on doing a Google search or anything, but
I already have.
You know.
Oh, I'm him.
No, no. Peter's over there doing it, but
I'll bet just, they have. You know, and the ones who haven't probably will.
Who knows? When you're 23 or something, you might there might be some, you know, you might have drove a car too fast or something, so we might not be able to name a highway after you someday.
Madam Chair, and that's okay if they don't want to name a highway after me, and I probably do have things that I'm not too proud of, but I wouldn't expect to be honored for them either, and I, you know, we'll vote the way we're going to vote here, and I'll respect that however you vote. However, this is going to be set up in our Capitol for a lot of people to see. A lot of young people visit our Capitol. And I guess I'm not going to go into it. I know the day is getting long, and I'll just express that I have a problem with that, and that's why I've put the amendment forward. Thank you.
Okay. Nellie Stone Johnson is probably one of the people most responsible in the state for having gotten me elected. I was, believe it or not, first of all, in my past, I even once went to a Republican caucus. But the first time I ran, I was actually opposed by someone who thought they were running to the left of me. And Nellie Stone Johnson made a passionate speech at one of the left-wing organizations that was doing endorsing, and that was responsible for my endorsement. So I'm very grateful. You know, everyone gives you another reason for all of you to vote against her. I'm very grateful to her. So even though I knew this is in another bill, and I, you know, could possibly support, I'm going to go with Representative Lilly on this. And she did renounce her membership in the Young Communist League.
Okay. Well, okay. Just then, Madam Chair, if I could have a roll call vote on this.
Oh, okay. Well,
so let me get this straight. There was somebody running to the left of you.
Yes, I beat him.
So Nellie Stone Johnson spoke to a group of leftists, convincing them that you were farther to the left of the person that was running against you?
No, convincing them that we needed women in the legislature.
Oh, okay.
And that I would do a better job than this other guy would. Representative Freiberg.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I was kind of speaking semi-facetiously on Pierce Butler, but assuming I can trust the accuracy of the source I found on the internet, I do have some serious concerns with his jurisprudence, you know, but it went along sort of in the interest of all of us getting along here, so hopefully, recognizing there are people, because I would second echo the comments of Representative Lilly and yourself, Chair Kahn, that Nellie Stone Johnson is somebody worth recognizing for her contributions. So I would hope that this amendment would be voted down.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. Roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Kahn?
No.
Freiberg?
No.
Green?
Yes.
Hausman? Lilly?
No.
McDonald? Murphy? Torkelson?
Yes.
Erdahl?
Yes.
Wagenius?
No.
Ward?
No.
Wills?
Yes.
There being four yeses and five noes, the amendment is defeated. Right? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. In other, this one deals with the Motion Picture Production Investment Incentive Program. I would do an oral amendment of $250,000 where there's a blank appropriation. And, you know, the other funds, I believe that yesterday Senator Cohen put in some funding for the investment tax credit. And there's the rebate is being funded. What I'm doing here today is just asking for a fund to be started and basically a placeholder to keep this alive a little longer and see if you know, we can make something of this. The money would come off the bottom line.
Okay. I spent a lot of time working on this with Representative Erdahl. I think there are very good arguments for this. Unfortunately, to really do the program, it's very hard to kind of dip your toes into the program, so hopefully they're going to figure out this addition to the bill will get us to figure out how to do it. We probably need a state appropriation to make this work of something of the order of $10 million and so forth to get us noticed along with what other countries and other provinces in Canada are doing. But I intend to support Representative Erdahl's motion, and we'll see how this works through the process. Any other questions or comments? Okay. All those in favor of the Erdahl 18
Ferguson.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry.
What?
I thought you were going to move this one.
Oh. Oh, sorry. Representative,
I was going to move this in exchange for a promise to be left out of the next book, but I missed my opportunity.
No, we haven't voted yet. We can change it. We strike Earl and put Torkelson.
I would happily move the A18, I believe it is.
Okay, Representative Torkelson moves the A18 amendment. All those in favor of the Torkelson amendment say aye.
Oh.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Out of the book? Does that cover
he
for
gets
all
a,
of us?
He gets a better part in the book.
Does that cover all of us who voted aye? Do we all get out?
No.
Oh, all right. Okay. Okay. Oh, yeah. You got another amendment.
Civil War.
Yeah. Okay. This looks like an Erdahl amendment somehow. A21.
Yes.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move A21. Again, in consultation with Secretary Ritchie, I'm asking for $25,000 to the Civil War Task Force. We do have some money left, but anticipating the next year, we're going to need some more for what we're doing. And so I'm just looking at $25,000.
Okay. Do we count up the amendments and then make Erdahl the chief author of this bill?
No.
Okay. Any comments on this amendment? All those in favor of the Erdahl amendment, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Anything else?
Nope.
11. What? No, I think replaced it with the other one that we did.
Oh, I didn't.
The one that he laid over.
I moved it to the bottom of the pile.
Yeah. I thought that was replaced by the...
Madam Chair.
Okay.
I will move the A11 and ask for your advice on this. I believe you've been sent some information, and I don't know if you're familiar with this, but the First Minnesota Films is... trying to make a short documentary film profiling Minnesota's role in the Civil War. And, you know, we're looking for some funding here. And
yes,
if you have any suggestions on this, if you think we can't, but if there were be an amount, where are we now, Ms. Thomas?
We don't want to put any dots in a bill that we send out because we.
No, I'm not suggesting we put dots in.
Yes. So we do want.
We're at.
$3.
Well, we got what?
$25.
We have. We're keeping score over here.
Just say you got to do the penny slots.
Oh. Alice has something.
Yes, Representative Hasley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can someone help me with what is First Minnesota Films, LLC?
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, this is Jeff Holman and Bill Siemens. They are I think they're a nonprofit, but I'm not positive. A good question. Perhaps I should withdraw this. Because if they're not a nonprofit, I don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, again, we're not finished till we're finished.
Right.
So I guess if there are questions about doing this, I'd prefer to leave it out rather than put it in and have the questions raised.
Right. No,
put it in after the questions.
Yeah, well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hausman asked me a good question, and I will follow up on that.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hausman. Okay. Any other amendments? Any discussion? Not? I'll continue. Okay. I move that 1183, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Okay, I don't have to move it. We're just laying it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Okay, I think there's no further business before us. Anyone until next week?
Yeah, what's next? The schedule for
okay. Next week? Okay, Michael, schedule.
Then we're done.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Freiberg, next Monday we'll be meeting at 4 p.m. or after session, depending on how long it goes, to do the Clean Water Fund portion of 641, which is coming from Representative Wagenius' committee. And then Tuesday we'll meet at our regular time to do the Parks and Trails portion. And then Wednesday we'll meet at our regular time, and then again at 6 p.m. if necessary, to finish up putting everything together in our final delete everything and add amendments to it. So.
Okay. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll be taking amendments at those times.
Yeah.
And is there a 24-hour rule or not?
We don't do rules.
I didn't think so. I just wanted to make sure.
Just wanted.
This is the wild.
What are you thinking of doing?
If you want to abide by one, you can.
Monday we'll have amendments.
Okay.
Monday will be amendments.
Any other? But, you know, for courtesy for the people who have to deal with amendments and make sure they work and so forth, we would like them as early as possible.
Good.
So, okay. Thank you very much for all your hard work, and the meeting is adjourned.